You know her as the dynamic entrepreneur with a passion for all things digital. With over nearly 40,000 followers on Instagram and 50,000 on LinkedIn, she's deeply engrossed in the realm of Web3, digital marketing. She's the founder of Cody Agency, Mooning, Liznick, 101 Lifestyle. She's worked with some major global giants, including Mecca, Uber Eats, L'Oreal, Frank Body, Kiki K, an author of 2 books, podcast host of Liznick and Superist, won a trail of awards, including 40 Under 40 Most Influential Australians. She's mentored by Netflix co-founder Mark Randolph and even ran for Deputy Lord Mayor of Melbourne. And now her latest biggest achievement, being a mother to Tex. Hard to think she used to be a tax lawyer. I'm talking about none other than Lisa Tay. If you want to know more about the fundamentals of a multi-successful entrepreneurial mindset Lisa has learned from her mentors, how to challenge stereotypes and expectations to unlock endless personal and professional achievements, and also discuss overcoming the pressures and perceptions of whether becoming a mother can hold you back from continuing to professionally achieve big, then this episode is for you. If she is not the epitome of master of achievement, I don't know what else is. But I'm so excited for you to listen to this episode. This is the first episode with our special guest for 2024 on Master of Achievement, Lisa Tay. Let's get into it. Lisa, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. I'm very excited to talk today.
I'm so excited. Before we jump into the thick of it, tell me what I need to know and what everyone else needs to know about your early years to, and you know, how you were brought up and your childhood, if you had any interesting stories that shaped who you are now as this driven, confident, entrepreneurial woman that I see all over my social media.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you. That's a very generous introduction. I definitely can say I was very different early on. You know, I always feel like I've loved all things creative. I love, as a kid, I actually loved books so much. I wanted to be a librarian when I grew up. So I ended up being a little bit of a different career path to a librarian, but I just love the way that you could just read and transport yourself into a different world. So I think from that perspective, I always liked not escaping reality, but I feel that there was always that creativity to my personality. And then I found out that I was not good at maths, so that pretty much eliminated anything maths related from my future career choices. But I did love fashion, so I was keen to become a fashion designer, but my parents are quite conservative, so they weren't that keen on me trying to become a fashion designer. So I ended up going to a bit more of like a recognized career path of a tax lawyer. So I ended up doing comm law at uni and then ended up working in tax for a little bit. So I feel like that career was quite interesting because I did feel a bit like I was an imposter. Like I never really knew what I was doing and I felt like I was going to get tapped on the shoulder at any moment and someone was going to say, you know you don't know what you're doing, like get out of here. So, you know, I managed to last about 7 years in tax and, you know, during that time I was not passionate about it. So I did struggle with getting up every morning, going to work, feeling excited. And along the way, I actually discovered, I'm going to date myself now, but I discovered social media. And that's really where I fell in love with consuming content at scale and in different ways. So obviously through things like Instagram, nowadays like TikTok, but I feel like that was a really interesting area for me. And then I eventually made the switch from tax into Witchery. So I managed their loyalty program. And then I was there for about a year and then started my first agency, Cody Agency, about 8 years ago. And then along the way, I've done some random things. Like I've written 2 books, started a toothpaste company. I don't know why I did that in the end. That was at Mecca. Then started a tech platform, another agency. So I think along the way, I've just realized I love creating new things, but I also have a belief that I can do anything which kind of sounds a bit funny, I guess, given the fact that I wouldn't say for toothpaste company, for example, I've never had any experience in that area, but I sort of just figure I can work things out. So I don't think I've ever not felt like I could do something. And I guess that probably came in some respects from my parents in some way, shape or form, my therapist will probably say. But yeah, so I think that really gave me the confidence just to go, okay, you see an opportunity in the market, just go and do it. So yeah, sorry, that's a really long-winded answer.
And would you say, no, that was like, that was a perfect encapsulation of you as a person. Say your parents are really entrepreneurial.
Oh, that's funny. Like, I wouldn't say they're really, really entrepreneurial at all. What I would say about them is that they're very empathetic and they work really hard. So I think that's probably what I took from them more than anything, like their work ethic. Like, we would be, you know, going to, say, rental properties that they owned on the weekend, and, you know, my brother and I would be painting, working in the garden, and I just see how hard they work to give my brother and I every opportunity in life. So from that perspective, like, I'm really grateful that I inherited that work ethic from them, and then just like their care for others, which for me, like, I would never say that I'm a good manager. In fact, I'm probably like a bad manager because I'm too soft. Like, I'm a real softie, so I hate giving people feedback. But my GM, actually, my GM Lana from one of my agencies, she always says, like, you know, you give feedback because you care, so it actually shows that you care if you're willing to give the feedback. So that's something I'm always working on. But I would say that, you know, my parents are both very kind and like really good people, so I hope that, you know, I'm somewhat like them in even a little way.
I asked that question because I was speaking to someone else recently, and it's very similar to you. They did radiology because their parents wanted them to, you know, do a recognizable job and have this financial security, because their parents never had that. But at the same time, and ironically, encouraging them to be an entrepreneur and have their own business, like, it's just so, it's like two different sides of the coin that they're getting their child to do. And so and I also feel that way about my parents as well. They're always encouraging me to be my own boss, but at the same time work for a corporation, because then I have more job security.
So, and I think that's the challenge. Yeah. And I think that's the conundrum that a lot of immigrant parents, and I'm not sure if your parents are immigrant parents, but my parents came out, you know, when they were in their teens, and they know how, like, most immigrants in Australia came out with nothing. So they've really worked to create and build a life here for their children, that next generation. And so I think they not get nervous, but they don't want to feel like you're not going to have any stability and security. And being an entrepreneur and running your own business pretty much means, like, you kind of don't really have any security to some degree. Like, it is quite stressful, and it can be hard when things aren't going well, because you're the first person to not get paid, for example. So it's definitely not the most secure career, but I honestly couldn't imagine doing anything else. Like, I feel very fortunate that I've just stumbled upon something that I love, which is digital marketing, and then a way to actually do that every day. So it doesn't feel like work, which is I feel very fortunate for, because, you know, when I was in my previous career, it really felt like a job. Whereas now I actually really enjoy what I do, which means I can work a lot harder at it. Like, I'll stay up, like, this week I've been working on a proposal till like 1 a.m. and it hasn't felt, you know, tiring or anything like that. Like, I've really enjoyed it. So from that perspective, if you can find something that you love, it's just, you're going to be infinitely better at it, rather than just, you know, trying to do a job just for the sake of a paycheck.
We hear a lot of people talk about finding things that you love, but how do you know it's something that you actually love, as opposed to just a mere spark of interest? How can you tell the difference? How do you know that you're on that right path, that, oh, this is something that I really, really want to do?
I feel like that will come with time. So for me, I've been doing digital marketing as an like agency owner for 8 years. And then prior to that, I was doing something in the digital space, like around blogging, I guess, like you'd call it these days. I was doing that since 2010. So, and I haven't wavered in my love for it. Like I feel almost like obsessively curious about learning, what the latest thing is in the space is. And, you know, I'm always on social media, analyzing things, sending my team ideas. So I feel like I'm just naturally, I've just stumbled across something that gives me energy and excites me. Whereas, you know, tax, I don't know who's excited by tax, but certainly not me. it was pretty clear to me early on that I wasn't like, you know, wanting to read tax legislation on the weekends or anything like that. So I think if you do find something that you feel comfortable sticking with for a long period of time, it's probably going to be something that you're really genuinely passionate about. And if it gets you out of bed in the morning, you feel excited to do it, then that also makes a big difference as well.
Very similar to me, I also did commerce and then made the switch to construction, which is completely different fields. Totally different, but you changed careers as a tax lawyer and then you built your first marketing agency empire, Cody, and now you're one of the biggest names in digital marketing, and you've co-founded Liznik, which is a mentor-mentee platform. You started your toothpaste company. You have been an author, as you said. You've got 2 lifestyle books. You've won, you know, a shelf full of awards, 40 under 40 most influential Australian. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on, but what do you think was the secret to all of your success?
Oh, I definitely, I wouldn't say I'm successful, but I do feel lucky that I get to do a whole lot of different things. And honestly, it's the team for starters. Like, they're amazing. Like, they just really own, like, they take ownership, they have initiative, they're amazing, way better than me at doing all the things that they do. So having a killer team is so important, and it can be hard to find people that care as much as, you know, an owner, and I'm lucky enough to have found that within my team. So that's definitely key. My partner's been amazing, because he must give him a shout out, so shout out to Saul. So he's got like a bit more of a stable job, so I can just do all these different random things and try different things. So he's been amazing from that perspective, just to give me a bit more freedom to take a few more risks. And then, so I would say also I think I've got a little bit of like ADD or something. So I think I actually thrive having multiple things. Like, I find it really easy to switch between different companies. Relate. So I've got like my different tabs open, and I've got like, you know, I can switch and do some Cody work and then some mooning work and then some other work. So I do find it quite easy to do that. And I think I get enjoyment. Like, I think if I was just doing one thing, I probably wouldn't love it as much, if that makes sense. So I think being able to have the freedom to switch is good. And then the two things, like say the two agencies, they kind of complement each other. We, you know, share clients and things like that. So there is a little bit of overlap, which is nice. But, yeah, I'd say that, I would be nothing without my team. So shout out to them.
I loved what you said before, though, about how you feel like anything is possible. Like, you genuinely can just, you'll figure it out along the way. Like, you have this belief that anything is possible. I mean, do you think that is also a huge contributing factor to how you've been able to do so much?
Oh, definitely. I think it's just that almost like ignorance is bliss. I'm like sitting here, I'm like, I'll just work it out, or I'll ask someone who knows more than I do. And, you know, I've got no ego in the sense, like, I'm more than happy to recognize where I've got shortcomings, or I might not have the right skill set, or I might not have the right, you know, knowledge level to do something. So I think from that perspective, I very easily ask for help when I need to. So I don't know where that belief came from, but it's fantastic, because it means I can just try a whole lot of things, and then if I fail, I just pick myself back up again and then just keep going. So it's good from that perspective, if you can have that self-belief, and still I think be grounded in some sort of reality. Like, you know, I don't think I can start any business and have it be successful, but I think I, because I'm, as I've gotten older, I've become a lot more aware of my strengths, then it's just made it easier to go, okay, great, I can probably start this because I know that I'll be able to scale it or at least market it, for example. So I think being aware of what you're good at and what you're not good at, and then surrounding yourselves with people who are good at the things you're not good at, can help you get more success in business and in life.
And when I was growing up, I had this belief, and I don't know, I don't really know where it came from, but I just thought that if you were going to be a successful career person, you wouldn't be able to have the family, or you wouldn't be able to have the relationship, because your guys don't like it when a woman's too ambitious. I really don't know where I got this belief from, because it sounds so whack, but I really believe that, like, okay, if I'm going to really dedicate and succeed in my career, I have to give up my relationship. But with you, you've done so much, and you're an entrepreneurial person, and you have this thriving, loving marriage. What do you think about that? Did you have that similar belief? Firstly, did you have that belief?
I would say that I think I felt like I could always have a relationship, like a solid relationship. And for me, I was really lucky enough. Like, my husband and I first met at KPMG, like, when I first, that we was both of our first jobs out of uni.
So I worked at KPMG as well. But for a month.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. We survived it. That's good. So we got out. So we met in 2007, so that was like a really long time ago, and we were very fortunate because we grew together probably at a similar rate, in a, not even like necessarily in the same direction, but you know, I think a lot of couples, when they meet quite early on, then they end up growing apart and they grow in different paths, whereas we've gone different ways career-wise. But I think our values have stayed the same, and we complement each other really well. So, like, I'm really excitable, love rushing into things, whereas he's a lot more considered. You know, he's really good with money. I love shopping. So I think we just have
– we bring out me and my husband. Oh,
yeah. I think it's a very common dynamic.
We also met at KPMG.
Oh, no. I feel like we're so similar. So, yeah.
Going on here, yeah, exactly, KPMG. Exactly.
It's the new Tinder. Go work in an accounting firm. But it is quite interesting. I think when you find someone who's a very good, fit for you, then you're stronger together. So I found that with my partner, he's been amazing for supporting all of my crazy ideas, supporting, you know, me going down this entrepreneurial path, and been a really good balance for that. I think the thing that I always struggled with, and I was not sure about whether I'd ever become a mother, it was like, yeah, I guess it's just having a baby, because that was something that my partner really wanted to do. And I was like, oh, but I've got my businesses. How am I going to balance both? It's really hard when you're quite involved in the businesses as well. You can't just take, like, you know, I couldn't take 9 months of mat leave. So I put that off for a really long time. And so I just thought, I don't know if I can do both, because, like, I'm obviously managing lots of different things. And then I just thought, you know what, I'm going to just work it out along the way. So we ended up having our first baby in September. Little text. Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, a little boy called Tex. So he's been amazing, and I won't lie, it was definitely hard, and even now it's still a little bit hard, because I'm trying to balance work, and, you know, I think it just changes the way I work. So sometimes during the day, if it's just me at home, I might have to, you know, just work at nighttime instead. So, you know, make sure he's settled during the day, and then just spend a few more hours after hours just to do that when my husband comes back from work. My parents and in-laws have been amazing to support. So I went to work pretty much, like, I think I went back to work or started getting back on emails like a week after I gave birth, which I sort of felt a bit guilty. Yeah. I went to like an event a week after I gave birth. I'm like, I'm not missing this event. So out of the hospital, so I'm like, I'm just gonna go to this event. But you know, I think it's not, you know, I think it, when it comes to balancing everything, like, say, motherhood and business, I think you just have to do what's right for you, because for some women, they might never go back to work. They might want to go back to work after a year, a month, a week, but you just have to do what's right for you, because I found that for me, for my mental health, I had to go back to work and start doing things because I felt like I wasn't achieving during the day, just changing nappies, just feeding, cleaning the house, that sort of stuff. So it was, a choice that I needed to do just to stay sane. But it's, you know, I think that mums shouldn't feel guilty if they go back to work. Don't go back to work. Go back to work part-time. They just have to do what's right for them and their situation.
I love what you just said before, because it's actually something that I dwell on all the time, is being a mother and that decision, because working in construction, it can be very male dominated. But the thing is, like, I love construction. I've had such a positive experience in construction. But I have so many goals for myself. And because I switched careers so much later, well, I see it as later, I switched careers in my mid-20s, and I just feel like, oh my God, there's still so much more that I want to achieve. And my husband wants to have kids straight away, and I'm like, I'm really not ready for this. And like, I never ever understood that pressure that women sometimes have when they have to choose between career and motherhood until probably like last year the year before that, when I sort of realized like, oh shit, I'm getting married, and oh shit, that means we're gonna have to have kids soon. And it's so hard, and I think it's so hard for women in so many different industries, but especially construction, and especially women who are on site, because like, I can't be walking around pregnant on a job site. Like, it's not safe. And I guess now that you are a mother, what was a limiting belief that you had before that you now know is not something that could limit you?
I think before I worried that I couldn't do it all, run a business and look after a baby, but I feel like it makes me a better mum, being able to work and show, you know, my little boy when he grows up that his mum is really ambitious and that she loves what she does. And she, because I feel like when I'm spending time with him, I'm like much more focused on him and I'm happier. Like, whereas I think before I almost like, I didn't resent him, but I was like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm just changing nappies all day. And, you know, I wasn't feeling like I was really productive. So I think that negatively affected my mindset. I think from your perspective, being in an industry like construction, it is quite hard. Like, especially if you don't have a company where there have been a lot of women who have gone before you to have children, because I think when you come back from having a child, you might be breastfeeding or you might be pumping, for example, or you might not have the support that you need, like from a, you know, care perspective, like whether it's with parents or things like that. So I think it can be quite challenging for a lot of women. So I think it's definitely worth trying to find companies that are supportive and have, you know, give you a chance to come back to work maybe gradually if that's what you want. But also, if you work at a company where there haven't been that many women before you and they might not be able to help you transition, this could be a good opportunity for you to own that and actually say, well, I'm going to create a policy, like a maternity policy. So, you know, I know that one of my friends worked for one of the big investment banks. She was the first woman to come back from maternity leave, because no women would even, like, there's barely any women in, you know, positions of leadership or anything, but barely, no one came back. So she actually created a policy and create all these new systems to help support women who were on maternity leave. So she said that when she went on maternity leave, no one from the company contacted her at all. No one contacted her to check in or anything like that. So, you know, I think that you might be the one that actually can help shape that, policy to make it easier for other women who are coming up through the company to go on maternity leave and then come back and feel like they're supported and welcomed. But, like, I'm not going to lie, like, it is it's very challenging. I'm very fortunate because I've got amazing parents and in-laws who can help support, which allows me to go back to work. But, you know, not everyone is lucky enough to have that support. So, but I can say that once you start talking, I think once you start to have a baby, you start to talk about that with other people and you realize we're all kind of just working through the challenges together. And unfortunately, there are still challenges. Like, it's not like, you know, I think things have gotten a little bit better for mums, but even I look at, like, one of my friends, I was talking to her, Rebecca, she works for a company called BizCap, and she said she's put out a role specifically targeting mums, because she said you'll find all these amazing mums who are, like, you know, really skilled up, but they don't have, you know, jobs, don't have that flexibility for them to come back and then maybe scale up, or don't recognize that they might have to go and pump during a meeting, or, you know, things like that. So she's actually written a role specifically for mums, which I think is amazing, like, massive credit to her.
Yeah, wow. That's incredible. And it reminds me of this study that one of she's an inspiring woman in construction. Her name's Alison Myrams. She used to be the CEO of Roberts Co. And they did a study. It was the first ever study to be done in construction where they trialed the 5-day work week. And on these two particular sites, they were building a hospital. They had breastfeeding rooms in the toilets. Great. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, like, wow. I didn't even, because I'm not a mother yet, I don't even think that we are oblivious, and we're just setting up these walls up for women who are mothers to come back from work. Like, yeah, we don't have the right facilities to support them. And naturally 100%. That's already making them not want to come back to work. So it's so true. It's just those little things. And even when I took my little nephews out to the aquarium and we had a pram, and, like, I was just thinking, oh yeah, I can't just walk down the stairs with this pram. Yeah. Like, I have to go to the nearby lift. And where is this lift? Yeah. It's hidden somewhere in Whoop-Whoop, and I have to try and find it. And it takes 15 minutes to wait for the lift. And during the lift, the kids are getting really restless. It's like these things I don't even know because we don't have women who are mothers who are on site doing these roles, like, we'll never know. We'll never be able to make the environment better because they're not coming back, and we're not making it a welcoming place for them to come back.
You're 100%
not intentionally.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Because even if you think about it, a lot of the people in leadership positions making decisions about what office to go to are probably men who have never had kids, or not to say never have kids, but they're not the ones having the children. So they don't realize that you might need to go and pump in the middle of the day, and you don't want to go and sit on the toilet and hide away and try and do that. Like, that's really awkward, like, if you hear the pumping machine. So, you know, I think it's not so much that they don't want to necessarily support. They just have no idea. And like you said with the pram, probably a male designed that who, you know, had no idea that you need to think about what happens if I've got a pram. How am I going to, like, find the lift? Like, you know, just, we need to put the right signage in. We need, like, a breastfeeding room in here, or a nappy change facility. Like, how many places don't have a change table, like, for people? So what happens if they need to change a nappy? You're, like, trying to find a surface. Like, do you do on the bathroom floor? Like, so, yeah, it's I think until you actually become a parent, and probably more so, dare I say it, not to be sexist, but a female who's given birth, you probably don't even realize all these things. Because I know I definitely didn't. And I was like, wow, I really realized there's a lot of facilities lacking for women.
Yeah. Now that you are a mom, how has your perception of achievement changed? Or if it hasn't changed, has it inspired you to achieve even more?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it inspired me to achieve more, because I feel like I want to be a good role model for my son. So I always think about, how is he going to perceive me? How will he perceive my relationship with those around me? How will he perceive the way I treat others? So I want to be a really good role model for him, and I want him to feel like he can do anything as well. Like, I think back to my childhood, and that really actually, you know, when we decided to have a child, like, in the lead up, I was thinking a lot about, like, what sort of mum I wanted to be and what sort of child I wanted to raise as well. Because ultimately, like, I want Tex to know that he can do anything he wants, but also the importance of being a good person. So yes, you can do anything you want, but don't step on people to get to the top or get to where you want to go. So I think it's just working out what key values are important and making sure that I'm, like, living that every day so he can see that. Because kids, you know, I think they don't do what you say, but they look at, you know, like they look at what you do, and that's what actually where they get their behaviors from. So it is a bit scary to think, I can't just, you know, be irresponsible. Now there's like someone looking at me who's little, who's going to be, you know, going, Mom, why'd you do that? Or why didn't you do that? So yeah, it's pretty interesting. Scary.
Yeah, but you got a mini me to look up to. I mean, yeah. You, brother, to look up
yeah.
to. What do you think your, I mean, before you had Tex and while you were here having all these massive goals and extremely ambitious, what was your ultimate driver to do so much? Because not everyone wants to do that. It takes a certain person to go, wow, I can, there's so much out here and I can really do whatever it is that I want. But that's like, I guess the first level is giving yourself permission to know that you can do whatever you want. But then the second is actually putting in the work to go out there and work for it and achieve it. So what is that ultimate driver for you?
I would say that there are two things. So firstly, the desire to be happy. I know it sounds really cliched, but I would say like I'm earning less than what I would in corporate, but I'm so much happier. Like I really love what I do. So that desire to get up every day and feel energized is something that really drives me. And then secondly, personal growth. So I actually love doing new things. I love being uncomfortable with, you know, trying to upskill myself and being in positions where I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I'm just going to work it out. And then I feel like I've learned. So, you know, I do feel that when you're stressed out, it sort of means that you're probably doing something that's uncomfortable, which means you might not have done it before, which is why you're stressed out. So for me, that feeling of being uncomfortable, like I actually personally love it, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but then I feel like I'm always growing, you know.
Yeah.
The last thing I want is to feel like I'm doing the same thing over and over again. That for me would just be like a slow death. I just always want to make, I always want to make sure that I'm doing new things. And so people always go to me, oh, what's your, you know, what are you looking to achieve, you know, this, you know, at the start of the year, everyone's like, what are your goals for this year, where do you think you're going to go? And I actually never like knowing. I prefer to almost like just have a blank slate and be completely open to any opportunities, because if I feel like I'm too focused on particular goals, it almost like takes me down a certain path and it shuts me off into other opportunities. So I remember one year during COVID, obviously no one was expecting that, and then I ended up running for Deputy Lord Mayor of Melbourne, and I honestly have predicted that I would have even explored politics at all, because I know nothing about politics. Like I was driven more to help small businesses, but if I, you know, I think just having myself open to opportunities really, you know, I guess presents them, and then you just have to take them.
That was one of the things that really inspired me when you first came across my LinkedIn, was that firstly you were this powerful woman, powerful Asian woman, and you were so confident in yourself, and you were just so willing to embrace the fact that you were on this learning journey. Like you weren't afraid to say, hey, I don't know what I'm doing, but this is really cool. And I thought that was like, it was so refreshing, because especially on LinkedIn when everyone is trying to show, oh, look at all these things that I'm achieving and like doing. And then you get you coming onto my feed going, hey, I'm just trying this out because I really just want to challenge myself and I don't really know what I'm doing, but it's really cool.
Yeah. Let's go on the journey together.
Yeah. So- yeah. And I think that's like, I mean, do you think that's also what's made you so successful, is the fact that you're just so willing to embrace all of who you are? And there's just, I mean, from Cody website to Mooning and your Instagram and your LinkedIn, there is just this fun, refreshing aspect of you where it's a great balance of, hey, I'm ambitious and I've got really big goals and I'm out here achieving, but also, fuck, the journey is really fun. Like, I'm really enjoying the journey.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that because I come from the world of Instagram where obviously you have, you know, a post stuff that isn't necessarily super value adding, so to speak. It's like what I wore to this event where I, you know, had breakfast. But when I decided to jump on LinkedIn, which was in 2019, I really actually thought about it and thought, oh, do I have to wear like a suit? Do I have to be professional? Does my content have to be like shot with a professional camera? And I thought, you know what, like if I'm going to do this properly, I'm just going to be myself. So I'm going to wear whatever I want to wear. I'm going to say whatever I want to say, shoot just on my phone. And so, you know, I feel like just being true to myself meant that of course there's going to be people that don't resonate with my content, which is totally fine. Like not every single person is going to like you, but you end up just attracting people who are similar. So they might share like a sense of the same sense of humor or similar sense of humor, or they might share similar values. So I think just by having the confidence to be yourself, you'll naturally attract people who will like you for you. Whereas if I went there and wore like a stiff suit and felt like I had to speak really properly and have everything really polished, I'll probably attract a type of person that I wouldn't probably necessarily get along with anyway. Because if anyone knows me, like they know that I don't take myself too seriously. I work really hard, but I'm, you know, always open to have a laugh. And, you know, I make jokes all the time. They're terrible jokes, but I still try and make them. So, but, you know, I think that just by being yourself, you'll attract the right people. Yeah, you'll attract the right people. And that's hard, I think, as a woman in business as well, because there's so much more judgment, you know, about what women wear, if they wear, you know, certain clothes or they have, you know, like they wear makeup or certain types of makeup. So it's really, I think, it's a lot more challenging for women. But I do feel like, you know, there is a responsibility that I have to be out there putting myself on social media, especially on a platform like LinkedIn, so other women can see that you can be whatever you want to be, whether you're Asian, whether you're, unfortunately, I can't say young anymore. I'm not young anymore. But, you know, no matter what your background is, thank God for the Asian genes. But, you know, no matter who you are, what your background is, like you can be whoever you want to be. So for me, I, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And I know that when I was going up through KPMG, there was probably like 40 partners. Two of them were women. And one of them didn't have children. The other one, I think, had a child and came back to work within like a week or something. So it was really hard for me to look up at these women and go, I want to be like them. So I just want, you know, I feel like there's a responsibility for someone like myself to go, hey, look, I don't have my shit together yet, but I'm out here giving it my best, trying, you know, everything I can, but trying to be a good person at the same time. So, and, you know, I think it's quite interesting that you bring up about being Asian. Like, you know, I think in Asian culture, we're a lot more taught to be behind the scenes, not sort of put yourself out there so much. So since I've started posting on LinkedIn, I do have a lot of Asians actually reach out to me to say it's really nice to see someone that I can, you know, that is like me. Because I look at media landscape in Australia and it's still very white. Like, you know, I look at mainstream radio, no one of color on mainstream radio, pretty much. Even TV, you might have the token, you know, person of color, but it's still very white, which is really quite sad to see. So I feel like, you know, if I've got a platform, then I might as well use it to show people of color that, hey, look, you don't have to be a white person to succeed. Not that I'm successful in business, but to be out there and giving it your best shot.
All I can say is I'm so glad that you came onto my LinkedIn a few years back, because it really did inspire me to be like, hey, I don't have to, like you said, put on this professional front. Like I can really be, I'm playful, I'm cheeky. Yeah. Like I can show that online, and it doesn't reduce my credibility in any way. Yes. So thank you so much for like using your platform, because it's helped me, and I certainly think it's helped many, many, many other women. But I also can really resonate with what you're saying about us being raised in an Asian culture and being taught to be the submissive, like subservient one. Yeah. Because, I mean, even now I'm married, my mom's like, Steph, you're so crazy. Like, I don't know how your husband married you. She doesn't understand why I'm in contention. She's like, why are you so loud? Like, you need to. Yeah, she even said to me, this is what she said. She said this to me a couple of weeks back, because I told her I was working like some really long hours on this project that we're trying to finish. She's like, Steph, you're married now. You don't need to work long hours. You just need to work your 8 hours and go home, and you need to spend time with your husband. You need to stop like wearing construction boots and walking around in pants. You've got to put on some dresses because men like women in dresses. And, you know, like men don't like women who work long hours. Like, you don't need to work this hard. That's why you have a husband. I'm like, Mom, we're in 2023. Like, don't talk to me.
That's it.
Don't
like,
say anything to me.
That's it. Like, because they're not exposed to, I guess, like, the modern woman who wants to have it all, or who wants to have a career and have a good home life and wear whatever they want to wear. Like, if you want to wear construction boots, you wear construction boots. If you want to wear a dress, you wear a dress. But, you know, I think that generation still is in their bubble of their friends, you know, still being conservative, still having maybe more traditional roles for women. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, it's important to, like, if you, like, say for you, for example, like, you could be out there on LinkedIn talking about what it's like being a woman in construction, because I know, like, a few, and I can guarantee that, like, your content would resonate with them because they're probably going through similar challenges of working in a very male-dominated industry, and you might inspire them to do different things because they're seeing you. So I feel like you're a really great example of a modern woman who's out there, you know, with a really great relationship, but who's pursuing their career. And you know, I think that I've got so much respect for women like you. You know, I think it's very inspiring to see.
Thank you. I got to show my mom this section so she can calm down. She calls me all the time and she's like, Steph, I'm really stressed that you're working too much and your husband's going to leave you. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, just edit the section and then just send it to her. But I mean, our parents Mom, do it because they care. So they just, you know, they think that, like, they want you to be in a secure relationship and they want you to have, you know, a happy home life. But I think what they don't realize is your husband, like, you got married because, like, he loves those things about you. Yeah. He probably loves the fact that you're ambitious. He loves the fact that you're, you know, a female and you're, you know, doing amazing things in a male-dominated industry. Like, you're not afraid of that. Like, you're fearless. So, you know, I think by changing that and, you know, becoming someone that you're not, like, he probably wouldn't like that. Like, so it's actually the advice maybe necessarily isn't, I don't want to say it's wrong, but, you know, I think your husband's, you know, I think you're together because of who you are. Like, you're being true to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and I think that helps, like, when you really know who you are and, like, you're really, really proud of it, it just helps you weed out those comments. I've got two last questions for you. You're mentored by Mark Randolph, who is the co-founder of Netflix, and you've worked with some huge household names, including Frank Body, the founder of KKK, the founder of Triangle Swimwear, Uber Eats, Adairs, Innisfree. I mean, like, that's just to name a few. What do you think was the hardest lesson that you had to learn on this journey of entrepreneurship and all the achievements that you have had to date?
I would say it's like, you can't be afraid to ask for help. And, you know, I think people see it as a sign of weakness. And so they're scared because they're worried that people go, oh, you're not actually very good because you're asking for help. So I think the sooner I realize it's okay to show that you're not doing well or you're struggling with something, the quicker it was for people to rally around you to help. So for me now, I'm just like, I've got all these weaknesses, I've got all these problems, people help me so then I can get to where I need to go faster as opposed to just trying to wallow in self-pity and try and work it out myself. So I think that for me was like a tough lesson, but like a really important lesson. So, yeah.
Is there a certain way that you like to approach asking people for help? Like, for example, I also struggle with that. And one of the ways that I like to preface my question when I'm asking things, but I also don't want to feel that guilt of like, oh, Steph, you should know this. Like, why are you asking this question? People are going to think you're dumb. I like to preface my questions with, I'm going to ask something really silly, but like, how do you do this and this and this? Do you have a similar strategy?
Well, I think sometimes if you're like, I'm very... Well, I'm similar to you. Like, I don't like asking people for help, but what I've realized is people actually love to help. So I think if you're surrounded by the right people, they're like, no, I'm more than happy to help you. But I think showing people that you've maybe tried to solve something yourself first, that can also like be a good way to do it, just so they don't feel like you're just being lazy and you can't work it out. You're just trying to, I guess, shortcut. So you can say, hey, you know, I've tried to do this, this, and this. I haven't been successful because of this, this, and this. Do you have any suggestions on how I could do it better? Or is there any way I could get your help to do X, Y, Z? And then where possible, I always try and offer to pay for people's time, because I know everyone's time is so valuable. So I might say, can you do some consulting to help me with this? Or maybe do like a session for my team with this. So it just shows that you value their time. And, you know, more often than not, people are like, no, I'm more than happy to help. But I never want people to think I'm trying to get their time and knowledge for free, because they've got that knowledge because they've gone through hardship, or, you know, they've tried things that haven't worked. They've spent money that might not have worked. So I want to always be respectful of people's time and be respectful of, you know, people's knowledge. So but yeah, I think more often than not, people are really happy to help. Like, I think a lot of us as humans just feel you get that good feeling when you help other people. So if you're surrounded by the right people, I feel like a lot, like pretty much everyone will be happy to help you.
Oh, I love what you said, but I don't want to go off another tangent, but just about investing in knowledge, in people's knowledge and their guidance. But I won't digress. The last question that I have for you, and, you know, thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I could speak to you, you know, for hours and hours and hours. The last thing that I'd really love to ask you is, what is one thing that everyone who is listening to this episode, they should know or take immediate action after they listen to achieve their goals and achieve their success?
I would say have a look at the people around you, because you're so influenced by them. And if there are people that are pulling you down, get rid of them. Like, it took me a really long time and probably too long in life to realize that, because negative energy is contagious. So if you're surrounded by negative people or people that aren't truly there and don't have your back, then the minute the shit hits the fan, like, they're going to be nowhere to be seen. So that core group of people around you is so important, because they're going to help shape, like, you know, they're going to help you achieve your dreams. They're going to help make you a better person. They're going to be there when you're down. So I think making sure that you have the right people around you, you're going to be able to get success so much quicker. And just enjoy life, you know, like, you'll have people to celebrate with when things go right. But, you know, on the flip side, if things go wrong, you'll have people that you can turn to, and they'll help you, you know, pick yourself back up again, or solve the problem. So I'd say, like, whoever's around you, like that group is going to be so crucial to winning in business and life.
I love that advice, because in construction there can be days where everything is going wrong, and there's been so many times where, like you say, you just have to enjoy the process. Like, everything is going wrong, the material didn't show up, this trade let us down, water came in and soaked all the joinery, and now we have to pull it back out and pay, like, you know, $20,000 for a new kitchen. This marble from Italy cracked, and now we have to reorder another slab. And sometimes, like, it can feel so overwhelming, but, like, the amount of times where I've felt like, wow, how am I going to even get through this? And you just stand there and you laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, you look delirious, but it makes everything so much easier to get through.
But you actually, you can get through anything. Like, if you look at all the times, exactly like what you just said, so things go wrong, things that deliver, things break, all that, and then you look at, like, you got through that. And so, you know, when you realize you can get through anything, like, sometimes it's going to be hard, sometimes it will be expensive, sometimes it's going to be painful, but you'll get through. Like, we can get through anything. So I think when you have that mindset, you go, yep, this is, it's not like the end of the road. This is just a setback. So yes, it might just mean where I need to go is a bit slower, but I can get there, and I will always get there. So I think just knowing that, because, like, there are times where I'm just like, am I even going to be able to have a company? Like, you know, during COVID, even post COVID, I'm like, you know what? Like, sitting here feeling negative isn't going to help me move forward. So I've just changed my mindset, and then I'm like, okay, now I'm just going to be positive. just work out how I'm going to move forward from this situation, because there's no point just sitting here because I'm not going to go anywhere. So, yeah.
It reminds me of this quote I read where it said, you have a 100% success rate of getting past all your worst days. So what's the likelihood of you not like surviving another bad Love day?
That. Yeah, it's so true. We just get it. Yeah. Like you slowly put one foot in front of the other, and it doesn't have to be like giant steps forward. It can just be lots of little steps. We are still moving forward. So that's the key.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I think it's going to be so powerful for especially women, new moms. I hope they feel inspired. I hope they feel like they really can do everything. And I'm so excited for you. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Steph. Really appreciate it. And you're creating a fantastic resource. So I know that you'll inspire lots of people for generations to come.